welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And as we've kind of concurred, or we've kind of gone down this path, that the best way to get you engaged, the best way to kind of motivate you, is through your wallet, through your checkbook, through your banking account. And so with the volatility of the market, and by the way, folks, it's only going to get worse. It is only going to get worse. So bottom line, just remember that the debt is fraud, that they have no ability to be messing with our economy the way they have. We've never given them the authority to even control the SEC. Anybody that is, the SEC was a grab back in the 20s. And the federal government at that point in time was, I'll just say, unfettered. We the people, you know, this greatest generation that, you know, that generation we referred to, we the people, actually, you know, failed us at that point in time. They allowed Social Security. They allowed all of these overreaches by FDR. Why? Because he was so charismatic? He was a tyrant. Well, all that being said, just don't forget that debt is fraud. We don't legitimately owe that money. The nations that are coming to us to basically give us money, I mean, it's not like we're not giving money and throwing everything everywhere else. We're paying, we're subsidizing communism and its growth and globalism throughout the world. This concept of global corporations and so forth, it was born here because we were the open society. And we actually had, well, we'll get into that. We're going to dive into corporations. And we're going to dive into our form of government today, because a Republican form of government is, you know, not very well understood. And as a matter of fact, when I talk to anybody in a one-on-one discussion, you know, they think that, you know, we're a unique republic, and actually we're not. We used to be a unique republic. But we're not anymore. We actually don't have the American design of a Republican form of government. I mean, everything kind of seems to be there, but it has all been perverted. Now, most people think that the rest of the world are democracies and so forth. And actually, that's not too far off. But every single nation out there is a constitutional republic. So if you think our constitutional republic is, you know, anything, you know, like the rest of the world, then you're wrong. We have been defrauded out of our government by a lot of people, especially men in black robes, who have hoodwinked the globalists and have actually helped propel us down this path of globalism since the 1800s, folks. When the federal government started stepping into this thing called corporatism and so forth. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can kind of pull it up, because just to cite you the reference on this, if I remember correctly, it was in 1866 when the Supreme Court made a ruling on the Santa Clara County v. Union Pacific Railroad. And in that one ruling, in that one document, a court reporter, inserted a personal commentary, you know, basically called a headnote into the decision, basically stating that this corporation or corporations were persons. And this is how that little toe or that nose got into the tent. The camel's nose got into the tent. And ever since then, they've been basically helping propel this concept that corporations are people. Now, folks, help me out here. When we look at the Union Pacific and Santa Clara County, Is the railroad a part of the Constitution? No. So a case involving the railroad, how did that get in front of SCOTUS? Oh, well, because the Supreme Court takes any case that they want to take, especially if they can use it to bend the law. As a matter of fact, when the county of, and actually I'll bet you anything, the Santa Clara County government, and this probably California, right? Santa Clara. And they probably pursued this up to the Supreme Court. Whoever was pursuing this case and getting it up to the Supreme Court, the opponent, if in this case the Union Pacific Railroad, they should have basically said, hey, there is no jurisdiction. The federal government has no jurisdiction. This does not arise under this Constitution. They only have jurisdiction over those things arising. And we're not talking about interstate commerce. We're not talking about a problem between one state and another state. But to be clear, the federal government has no ability to regulate, create law, or be involved in corporations. Show me in the Constitution where corporations were handed the ability to regulate, the ability to oversee, the ability to be involved in the businesses of the states and the corporations that were established in those states. Even when you have a corporation operating in multiple states, those corporations, or at least those operations, are autonomous. The corporation may be tied, but each state can regulate that corporation the way they want. Now, corporations started using leverage and forcing states to behave a certain way. In other words, so that they could get favor and start doing things. You know, the old prisoner dilemma, right? The prisoner dilemma is when you have two people that are suspected in a crime, then what they do is they separate you. And they basically go back and forth between, oh, well, so-and-so's saying this, and we're going to be giving that person a deal unless you want to talk first. Whoever talks first gets the deal. And that's how they do it. Now, putting aside, you know, the morality there, and putting aside, you know, how you get played in, you know, in law enforcement, the fact of the matter is, The states get played by these corporations. These corporations are like the cops, but they're not. They're not the cops. The states are the cops. And as a matter of fact, because the states don't have the ability to create a compact or to create, you know, treaties or anything else, they are autonomous. Now, it only makes sense that states should cooperate with each other. So in other words, if one state is willing to allow a corporation to come in just to get the business to come into their state and start polluting and everything else, then, you know, we've got a real problem. And this is where these other states should, and we need to have state powers to protect the state and the union. What I mean by the union, if you actually have a corporation that is operating in another state and they're doing some bad things and the state doesn't care, then you can actually, you know, because that right there is an interstate commerce problem. Because if all of a sudden they're affecting your water, they're affecting the air, then you can establish some form of regulations where they, but this is where you start getting the federal government. So this is when we start peeling on the onion and we actually start getting into the heart of the matter. The real problem is we don't want the federal government to regulate these corporations. So the problem that we have today, because as Madison laid it out in the Federalist Papers, I think it was Federalist Papers 43, he said that the federal government was externally facing I may be wrong on the number, but the federal government is outward. It looks outward for national security, and it's not to have involvement in the domestic affairs. So what do? Is you get a bad actor to force and say, okay, we want the federal government to do this. No, no, no. What we need to do is we need to allow the states to create these, what we'll call treaties, or I should say compacts, or actually not treaties or compacts, but allowing the states to basically bond together to start creating strategies and so forth, to where if you can get I don't want to say a majority, it needs to be a super majority, just like an amendment. But if you can get 2/3 of the states to basically say, we need to create an environmental protection agency. And oh, by the way, this isn't going to be an autonomous environmental protection agency. It's not going to fall underneath the United States. The representatives of this, it'll be a separate Congress. It'll be a separate body of representatives in a representative form of government. In other words, when we create the Department of Agriculture, why did we stick that underneath the federal government and for the president to be able to play with? If it's domestic in tone, if it's domestic in nature, then why would we give that to the federal government? We should have actually changed the Constitution to allow the states to create these different polities that would be supported by, only financially support. In other words, when you create the Department of Agriculture, and we look at, okay, the Department of Agriculture has to, kind of look over our strategies, what we want to do, if this is what we want to do, if the states really want to do this, and we start moving towards these strategies, energy would probably be the best for this particular case, because when we start looking at strategies, we want to make sure we're positioning ourselves with the world in what is best for the union, not the federal government to think that, but for the states to think this, because it is the state's job and responsibility to protect. And now we see how the federal government has basically victimized us and used our consumption of energy in America has made many nations wealthy, because the federal government has been able to do that. If we actually had a separate Department of Energy that was accountable to the states, and the states established the strategy, then they would basically turn that strategy over to the federal government and say, this is how you're going to protect us. This is what you're going to do. In other words, we need to be driving and controlling the federal government in such a way that they do not have the ability to conduct warfare against the states and the people. When you look at how they've been conducting economic warfare, whether that be via the energy, whether that be agriculture, in all different arenas, they have been engaging in warfare at the expense of the states and the people in promoting this globalist agenda. Just imagine where we would be, because at that point in time, we'd be able to actually control the budget of the Department of Energy. At this point in time, we don't, because it just goes into this magical, federal government, and they just print the money. And that right there, the Federal Reserve and the National Bank, all of these problems have come forward because the federal government figured, well, you know what? We're just going to do this, and we're going to do this because we can. And the states and the courts have hoodwinked them. In other words, because the states have been, or I should say, the federal government approached the states with this, pile of money, a pot of gold, and said, we're going to create this body of government, and we're going to give you money here so that you can interface with us. And this is how they've enslaved the states. Folks, if we cut these ties, if we actually get away from these economic chains that they're binding us. When we break those chains, we can unleash the economy of your state. And then we have to start having real, sincere, honest, adult conversations. We need to get the state legislatures to actually start maybe actually appointing, instead of a Congress, instead of actually setting up the Senate. Because when we look at the whole point of the Senate was supposed to be representatives coming from the state legislature, right? The state legislature. So what we would need to do is actually get the state legislatures to appoint these representatives regarding agriculture, regarding transport infrastructure. You know, when we start looking at what we need, do we need to have a highway or an infrastructure department that can actually service the union? Absolutely. And so when we bring in other states like, you know, Alaska, Hawaii, or some islands and or other states around the world, this body will basically, you know, ensure that we have some form of, you know, port systems, airfields, what have you, to where we at least have a quality interface with these other states in the union. But when we look at how the federal government has done that, they've actually, it boggles my mind, folks, that the federal government got away with creating the most favored nation status to China when Nixon did that. See, the federal government, we've covered this already in the ratification base. They have no ability to create a favored state or a favored nation. And the fact is that they're hoodwinking. We're saying, they've been saying, we want to throw all of our interest in building China up. In other words, they've been playing us, saying this is the new boss that we want to throw our money into. And now, are you happy with what you're seeing going on in China? Are you happy with how China has the dominance in economic trade throughout the world today? You know, we did that. Aren't you proud that we did that? Isn't that great? See what America and our ingenuity can do? We can create formidable enemies. We need to start really thinking and challenging the paradigm we're living in. The framers actually gave us a perfect system. The only little problem, because they thought and saw that the states at that point in time could not be trusted to create compacts. But now we have such a diverse union that you can't get an Eastern, Western, or Central control over the United States anymore. In other words, the South and the North, or the, you know, the coast and so forth. In other words, we have such a diversity now that when we really look at how the Senate would be functioning, there's no doubt in my mind you just couldn't get to that 3/4 majority in being able to do something that would actually benefit a few states or a, you know, 25% or more and hurt the other states. So when we talk about American republicanism, the brilliance, because of what is a republican form of government? A republican form of government, basically the definition out there is it's representative of the people. Our representative form of government is not representative of just we the people. I get into arguments over this all the time. Then why is it that Article 5 guarantees that the suffrage of the state legislature cannot be taken away from them in the Senate without their consent? We cover this all the time. The 17th Amendment never went out and said, hey, states, if you amend this, you will no longer have your suffrage. All it did was it changed how we chose the senators, how the senators were appointed. In other words, when we lay out this protection, the suffrage protection in the fifth article of the Constitution, then we can actually see how today every state in the union has lost its suffrage without their consent. Now, the contributor to this is the 17th Amendment, but the 17th Amendment never changed its suffrage. It's the Senate's responsibility to provide suffrage for those state legislatures. So the fact is, the state legislatures, it's their fault for not holding the Senate accountable to say, we're telling you to vote this way, and if you don't, we're pulling you back. So when we start really looking, you know, I'm just absolutely amazed that even the progressive amendments never really created a problem. Even the 16th Amendment didn't really create a problem. The 16th Amendment just allowed the federal government to change the direct taxation from apportionment to states to direct taxations to citizens. Now, they were, and they had been playing, like I said, actually it was a couple of decades earlier to the 16th Amendment, when the federal government actually started managing and, you know, playing its magical wand on the corporations, where they actually said, oh, you're a person now. And so down the road, they were laying the paving. They were creating this driveway to allow corporations to move up to some high ground, or actually get out to the open seas and start dominating the world. That's how we now have kings and queens and princes and princesses of corporations dominating the world and basically governing us. Look, folks, they don't have any power or authority to do that. They may be able to govern the world, and we look at, you know, certain governments like China, that actually, you know, has a very heavy hand with corporations. But why is it that every corporation in the world is, you know, basically playing to, or the major corporations are playing to China? Because it only is proven that China protects those corporations. In other words, those corporations are basically in charge. They've created their puppet governments everywhere. And they're basically playing us. So, bottom line, we need to really start looking at, again, going back to republicanism and the Senate. See, our Senate, the representation of the Senate, represents the body government that we created, or actually that our counties created. The place where we have county representation is where it's important most, at the state level. This is why, folks, you actually have three representatives representing you. You have one in the House of Representatives. You have one, in some places that you have two, just, and you have, the way they've messed up your state, you should only want one. You think you're getting two. Well, those two you're sharing with nine counties. In California, I think the worst case is nine counties share their one or two representatives for that legislative district, because they don't represent counties anymore. The fact is, we institute our governments, and those governments have a right of representation, and we, the people of those of that body government that we created, we have a right of representation. The courts, what they did in using this broad brush of saying, your counties do not matter anymore, we are moving towards an apportionment to population. If that is the case, then they should have done the same thing to states, so that they could rear their ugly head of despotism, saying that your states don't matter either. They basically backhanded your state, the counties of your state. And in addition to that, they held their hand from backhanding the states, because they knew had they gone down that path, they would have been called out as, you have no authority to be messing with that constitution or even the state constitutions. But anyway, we'll be right back, and we're going to be talking more about a Republican form of government when we come back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's ask this question. Do your corporations or businesses in your county or and in your state, are they entitled to representation? Should we have a third body government that actually represents the government, or I should say these corporations and businesses? Now, when we look at corporations, that could be a ma and pa, literally a self-proprietor, or it could be a, you know, this huge global corporation. When we start looking at the interest of somebody's business, the fact is what we want government to do is we want government to ensure that all businesses have equal opportunity. Now, when we look at the federal government has no enumerations regarding businesses and opportunities. Show me in the Constitution where they have that. It's not. So show me in your state constitution. This is where the problem is, folks. Your state constitution does not have this hands-off in making sure that the businesses that come up, you know, can actually create this, I'll just say, a hostile environment so that nobody can come along and compete with them. As a matter of fact, wouldn't we be better off making sure that our government does not get involved in protecting and providing laws and protections for certain businesses? Because this is how businesses have become these, you know, these huge corporations. What they do is they seek favorable, you know, land grabs. I mean, there's all sorts of ways businesses create advantages for themselves. And this is the nature of a business, and this is human nature. It's human nature to try to create an advantage for you. It's just like a business is trying to create advantage for itself in the marketplace. If it's got competition, it wants the advantage over its competitors. But our government's responsibility is to make sure that that playing field is always level and equal. And if you do that, and as a matter of fact, Alcoa was a really good example of this. And this really blows people's minds. But Alcoa had a monopoly on aluminum. And I just challenge you to go look at the history of Alcoa. Alcoa was a, I would probably say it was a socialist corporation. And what they did was they proved that if you actually center yourself in serving and taking care of your employees, it was almost like this utopian corporation. And so people loved working at Alcoa. It always kept its prices down. And so no other corporation could come in and compete in making aluminum, manufacturing and refining aluminum. This got so worrisome because as aluminum became this miracle metal in America and in the world, it became a major player in the world. All these corporations say, this is not right because we can't come in and compete against Alcoa because they're selling their products too cheap. Now, how was that bad? How was that bad? How was that a bad situation? Because Alcoa was maintaining a lower profit margin. They were able to share it with their own employees, and they were beating everybody. Alcoa was basically beating everybody, and these other corporations had to go to the federal government to say, you know, this is a monopoly and you need to break them up. Why? What that did was that raised the price of aluminum. Because, see, as Alcoa was improving its processes, instead of actually, you know, making more money because they invested some more, they actually brought their prices down. This is how they were dominating in the manufacturing of aluminum. Now, what's so bad about corporations doing things like that? As a matter of fact, Alcoa was, you know, environmentally friendly because they wanted to be that way. They didn't want to be a hostile entity. But the other businesses, which were hostile, actually sought and got government to basically go after them so that these other companies could compete and end up taking it. I mean, Alcoa is still alive today, but they're not the dominators anymore in aluminum. That's all they were doing. That's what their focus was. So as we look at how government gets involved in corporations, it should never be able to play like that, to actually come in and actually punish a corporation that's doing so well. And it's not actually taking, you know, it's not like it's, you know, lobbing artillery rounds towards its enemy, towards its competitors, right? They're not killing each other. Now, I understand the corporate espionage, corporate, you know, hostility is high. It's a dog-eat-dog world. But when you allow your state to start creating advantages and protections and favors, see, this was the beautiful thing about the federal Constitution, that they couldn't create favors. They couldn't actually, you know, call one port more favorable than any other port for, you know, shipping goods and stuff in. How is it that today we actually have favorable ports in America? The federal government was doing that, and it was doing that at the advantages of one state over another. Now, you can't, when you've got a competitive market, then, you know, it's always letting commerce kind of drive where it's going. Where, in other words, when you look at the West Coast, you probably have on the central or southern side of California is going to be more favorable for bringing commerce into America. But look at the East Coast. Now, you would think that the northern area would be more favorable and the south would be less favorable because there was more manufacturing in Europe. And it did. But why is it that New York, instead of Boston or instead of some other northern port, because, you know, the faster you could get to America, you know, the less fuel you had to expend and so forth. And so the further south you went, the harder it was. And that's the same thing with the north, or I should say with the north side of the Pacific. There was, yeah, you got China and Korea over there, but, you know, the majority of South America, you know, Asia, Australia, California is in a better situation of receiving products. The federal government had no business making and identifying, you know, one port over another. Did they do that? There's no doubt in my mind. As they started creeping outside, they started creating more favorable decisions towards one state. And airfields is definitely one of those things. When you look at airfields, you actually look at, you know, the strategic planning. And why is it that Chicago is such a favored, is such a large airport? When we look at Dallas and in the contravening of weather, the types of factors, I mean, Dallas would be, and actually Arizona is becoming a real dominating airport as well. How is this happening? Well, it happens because corporations and because the government creates these favors. Let me ask you this. When you look at air travel in America, why is it that there's hardly any air travel that goes north to south on the west side, but you have all sorts of north to south routes on the east side? Is there not a lot of people that need to go north and south? Yeah, there actually is. And those flights are just hard. They're cumbersome in contrast to the east. For whatever reasons, there's always been, and I don't know the answers of why and how all of this manipulation has been done, but the fact is the federal government should never have allowed these things to happen because they had no authority to be involved in these things. This goes back to the importance of states taking the authority over domestic matters. So the one part of the Constitution is Article 1, Section 10, where the states cannot create these types of polities because the Constitution forbids it. I believe we're at a point where the union itself can start making its own political concessions far better. I mean, I think the political compromises done by the union today would be far better than the federal government's involvement. We already know that the federal government's involvement in communications and all these other things, they've created these monopolies. They've allowed monopolies to thrive. Why is it that the states never stepped in and said, you know what, infrastructure is our game? If we want our states to be as productive as possible, we need to invest into our infrastructure. In other words, folks, if your state is actually moving and improving your energy grid, and your access to energy, you become more productive. Because energy is essential to productivity. When we start really looking at why, you know, we're being basically built on energy, we're being built on phone services and infrastructure. Just look at those alone. How much disposable income goes into those things that are essential to our productivity? Ah, that becomes actually, I think if you look at your three biggest costs, your mortgage, your food, which is your energy to just operate as a human being, and then energy and infrastructure, those things that you need, most people don't have hardly any disposable income beyond that. I don't believe, because when we look at the difference between the framers and what we live today, they didn't spend hardly any time or the amount of energy, on food and those things. They were actually pretty productive people, but that's because everything they did was productive. In other words, they grew food and they had a little extra food to sell, and they made money that way. You know, if they, you know, had a forest or what have you, or coal or whatever they used, they would produce it and they would sell it as well. George Washington was very, very successful because he had multiple businesses on his plantation. He created his own nails. I mean, there was lots of things he was fabricating. I mean, he didn't have factories, but he had the ability to basically man, equip, and provide essential products and services for his plantation. When you start looking, I mean, Thomas Jefferson, you know, made comments on those types of things. But anyway, what I want to do is I want to dive into why it is important for us, if we're going to have a Republican form of government, we need to start understanding how important representation is and what it needs to be. It should not be of corporations. It should not be where somebody can, banks, corporations, absolutely nowhere do we want representation handed to them. Are they necessities? Absolutely. We need people to be productive. We need people to be able to keep money. But this concept of the way banks have been able to make money and the bankers, everybody I talk to that understands the conspiracy plans, it's just a common knowledge how the bankers and corporations are the ones that are sucking the soul out of the world. How did we get there? Was it because of our free market? No. It was because our politicians were susceptible to corruption. When we look, and I'm going to be diving into, when we get down the road, when we get into some more content, new content, and so in the next couple of weeks, when we're done with the ratification debates, I'm going to go through the Organic Act. I'm going to go through some history and some documentation that happened at that point in time. But more importantly, I also want to go through some of these other documents, like the Whiskey Rebellion. I want to go through the Assumption Act, the Bank Act. By doing this type of content, then you can actually start seeing what was happening in America and how what Hamilton was doing was undermining us, and how down the road, when we finally fixed the one thing that was keeping America divided, slavery, when we finally fixed that, then we instantly were overran by British money into our politics so that Britain could start basically assuming powers by throwing money in, by assuming powers. And you know what? It's not like these people that corrupted themselves and compromised their soul and sold America out. It's not like they ever made any position of power. No, it was kind of like, look at what Judas got. That's what you see the politicians in America at that point in time. They got their 30 pieces of silver, and they were happy because they were better off. Did they hang themselves like Judas? No, and they didn't care because they didn't really see the true outcome of how they just basically opened the doors in moving us towards our destruction. We're on a path of destruction, not because the Constitution allows it. It's because, folks, we are allowing it to continue. The law of this land, the supreme law of the land, allows us to hold our representatives accountable. We have First Amendment right petition that for the redress of grievances. That is basically galvanized in the Constitution. You have the right to be able to ball your fist and hit your politicians right between the eyes with a First Amendment petition and call them out for their travesties, for their violations. We have the ability to do what we need to do. So when we start looking at, again, this Republican form of government, we actually have to start holding at and pulling back on the reins and saying, hold on here. Like when we look at the election, I can't tell you how many people have got these cockamamie schemes in how we fix the election system. You have to fix the election system at the counties first, and then you go to the states. But what you do is you have to make all elections local. Why is nobody doing anything addressing the absolute, I'll just say, the corruption that it's the sewage of our system? The fact that corporations can throw money and buy our elections, it's the same thing with foreign governments and foreigners, period, influencing. If you understand the concept that a person that lives in Grant County and you live in Lincoln County, then the person that lives in Grant County should have no ability to influence Lincoln County. He's a foreigner. They're foreigners. They have no ability, and they should not be allowed to throw money into any Lincoln County election. They should not have any say regarding those candidates that are running. Now, and you've heard me say this because I've mentioned this before, I do not think that we should allow, you know, whether it be Trump or whether it be, you know, Brad Pitt or George Clooney. We should not allow anybody that has some form of affluence, you know, they call themselves influencers, but it's affluence because they have this position, a high position in the media where they can say, yeah, I'm endorsing these people. It's one thing for somebody to take a test. You know, you have all your candidates that are running for your county commissioner, and they all take a test on the Constitution. Now you can actually say, I endorse this person because they had the highest score. Now that is a tangible endorsement because it is based on the actual merit of the outcome from that test. We should all be seeking doctors who had the best grades through doctor school. I mean, when you go shopping for a surgeon, when you go shopping for somebody that is going to take, you know, your life in their hands, don't you want the best? Absolutely. Why is it that we do not allow ourselves the best? The only way we can know whether these people are the best, not because Trump likes them. You know, one of the things I learned, the way they work in politics, you can't get an endorsement from Trump unless you get a certain amount of money into a kitty. In other words, it's all about how much money you're raising, which means that you're prostituting yourself for corporations. I would rather trust and support the guy that is calling for a full campaign and full compliance of the Constitution and not taking money. We have people like that, but they don't get the air spread, or they don't get the airtime. They don't get the advertising. They don't get their word out. And this is where we actually have to pull back, folks. We have to say, you know what? There's this thing called the National Broadcasting Service, right? There's this, you know, what is it? NPR, National whatever. Anyway, we should actually have at the county level, state level, and the federal level, this service. And this is where you actually get everything. The fact is that this should be ran by we the people. And it should be actually overseen like a jury. And when I say a jury, the fact is that we play these games to allow only those certain people that, if you're a U.S. citizen, and that means you can vote, then you have to be able to serve on a jury. If you do not vote, then you should have no say. That goes back to the premises of politics back in the beginning or during the framers' time. All people were considered U.S. citizens, but taxpayers, only the taxpayers were allowed to vote. In other words, the person that paid the poll tax was allowed to vote. In other words, you had to own property. So they actually had these checks, these systems that kind of made sure that the people that didn't have any property could take no interest. And only those people that had interest, those people that were willing to actually spend money on a poll tax, then they were able to vote. So when we start talking about making elections local, we really need to start looking at what and who people vote for. Now, when it comes down to representation, I believe every citizen should be able to vote. But when it comes down to a tax on, you know, for a school system, whatever that tax is going to be, a sales tax, we should abolish all property tax, all property confiscation. All of that is unconstitutional. We institute government to save lives and to protect private property. And when government can actually start taking your property from taxation and other methods, then that is antithetical to the reason why we set up this government. So when we actually start looking, and to me, folks, the common sense part of all of this is our Republican inform. If you have a say on who your representative is, corporations should not. There is no corporate representative. And so they should not be able to influence the elections of your representative. It's one thing that they influence possibly, very limited, though. I mean, I'm not a favor. I would not actually allow a corporation. I think it's one thing for a corporate CEO to come out and say, you know, because where that CEO lives, by the way, okay, if the CEO of Walmart lives in Lincoln County, Arkansas, then he should only be able to endorse the Lincoln County people, and he should only be able to endorse the statewide people, statewide. That's it. He should not be able to have any say over anybody running for office in another county for their legislative districts, judges, or anything else. But when it comes to statewide races, and as a matter of fact, I'm not even in favor of statewide races. I think we ought to get back to the Electoral College, or basically put that on the table and use the Electoral College to create your governor, your executive level at the state level. In other words, instead of having direct elections by we the people, mob rule, we should actually be looking at choosing our electors for setting up our state government, just like we do at the federal level. Do we have a say on who the attorney general is? No. I know in Wyoming, they want to actually have the people be able to, you know, elect their attorney general, because the executive, they don't like the fact that the executive appoints that. That's not an, and the Secretary of State is elected. Folks, why are we having a direct election instead of actually choosing your electors? And the electors should be based out of your county. If we have electors, then the electors would be running the campaign. Just remember, folks, that the whole design, this whole concept of having an electoral college at the federal level and the state level was because we couldn't have these campaigns. And when we look at the national and the state and the local county, you know, government broadcasting system where we want to have this contained advertisement. In other words, you can't, you know, run ads in the newspaper. It is going to be done by the, you know, by this free service so that nobody pays and everybody has an opportunity to actually go into, you know, competing for office. When we start looking at the electors for the county and the electors for the state, we should actually be choosing three electors, just like you choose three representatives. Electors is an honorary position. And it's a position that is where that person happens to understand. This is where I believe when the framers looked at electors, they knew that there would be men that would, you know, really have a good understanding of government, and they would not be necessarily active anymore. This is what the, I guess, the old codgers, you know, it was where the people that went out to the pasture, they became electors. Maybe they didn't need the money. These are the kind of conversations, these are critical conversations that we need to have at our county and our state level so that we can start understanding republicanism and taking back our government. Sorry for the long rant and the wild wanderings, but this is what we've got to do. I'm J.R. Mobley, we're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.